And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. Yes, I know it's been 2 months since I've had my last episode. I do apologize. It is what happens when you need to have a co-host because you know what your weaknesses are, and that is you drone way too much into a microphone and nobody wants to watch or listen. But we're here, we're back, and we have with us a 29-year veteran and has been with the Philadelphia Flyers as a contributing writer since 2017 and is the alumni content manager for the Flyers. And from hockeyhotstove.com, Mr. Bill Meltzer. Bill, how you doing, sir? It's been a while.
Yeah, been a while. Great to see you again.
It's funny. I was looking at the standings last time when we talked in October. It was still very early. We're like still like second week. But there's still quite a bit of parity in our division of the Metro Division. Looking at this right now, obviously Columbus is playing tonight at 8:30 against Chicago in the lone game for this Friday night. But the Flyers are currently at seventh place. They've played 53 games, 24, 20, and 9 with 57 points. It should be noted that they are 8 points behind the New York Islanders for third place and technically Pittsburgh for second place because they both have 65 points. And have a game in hand on the Islanders, but don't have a game in hand on the Penguins. Capitals right now sit in fourth place with 55 games played. So the Flyers have two games in hand on the Capitals, whereas the Islanders have one and the Penguins have three, 26, 22, 7 with 59 points. So anything can really happen this upcoming week, especially this weekend. That could flip things around once again to see the Metro Division flipped on its head outside of the Carolina Hurricanes. Since the last time we talked to now, as I mentioned, the part of the standings, what are some of the things that you've really have noticed with this Philadelphia Flyers team so far?
Well, through the first 41 games of the season, it's really been almost a tale of the season and January, because January's been a disaster with a couple of exceptions.
And we'll get to that.
I mean, the Flyers are 2-8-2 in their last 12 games, so they've gone from being in the playoffs to looking up, as you said. They have a lot of ground they have to make up. And I mean, with the Metro as a whole, you pretty much had to finish in the top three, because there's some distance between that and the wild card. So you actually have a better shot of finishing third in the division than you have of being a wild card team. So you pretty much had to finish in that top three, get that 2-3 matchup, and kind of go from there. With the Flyers, basically through the game of January the 6th, which was against Anaheim, Flyers won that game. Very physical, emotional game. Got a Gauthier, got the welcome back to Philadelphia treatment for the second straight year. Flyers were really fired up for that game, and Flyers won that game pretty convincingly. And then the Flyers had back-to-back home games against Tampa Bay. Now, you don't very often see back-to-back home games against a team. That was kind of something that happened during COVID, but you don't really see it very often. And Tampa Bay was on a roll, and they thumped the Flyers in both of those games. All right, so you take a deep breath, stand back a little bit, and then Flyers continued to struggle. They went winless in six in a row. And it all kind of started with a game against Toronto. I should take a half a step back here. The Flyers were winning that game 1-0 in the third period. They had a 5-on-3 power play, which they didn't score on. And then during the remaining 5-on-4 time, of all guys, Scotty Laughton actually scored shorthanded. Flyers lose that one in overtime. That's a point on the table in that game, but they played pretty well for the first 53, 54 minutes of that game. Shut down Austin Matthews. We're just coming off that win over Anaheim, and things were still looking pretty good, even though they blew a point. Then they got blown out twice by Tampa, and the ball just kept rolling from there. They went winless at six in a row, five straight regulation losses.
Now, you
Then,
mentioned real quick. I want to
yeah.
hop in on something that you said. You mentioned the Toronto game was kind of like that turning point.
Yeah.
As you know, I've mentioned this before with you and on the podcast, my dad's a big time Flyers fan. And it's not just him who has said this, but I've seen many others say this. But in a way, the Ducks game was the turning point for the Flyers because the Ducks ran and injured Jamie Drysdale. They injured Bobby Brink in that game. They took runs at the kid Denver Barkey, which who we'll talk about in a little bit because he's been playing very well. And it seems like after that game, the team, the Flyers as a team, has just been completely different. Like you mentioned, it was a convincing win over the Ducks, but there was a physical toll that came out of that game too, that kind of carried over into what became the 6-game losing streak.
But the weird thing though, Michael, is then the Flyers, after that 6-game losing streak, they had to go on a Western road trip, right? They played in Vegas, and Vegas was scorching hot. Flyers beat them 2-1. They got really good goaltending in that game, and Travis Konecny scored two breakaway goals, two unassisted breakaway goals. So that was just enough offense to win. Then they had just an absolute gut-wrenching loss in Utah. They had the game in hand, and then they up by 2 goals in the middle of the third period, and then they took a bad penalty, give up a power play goal. Okay, happens. You're defending a 1-goal lead. Final minute of the game, Garnet Hathaway has an empty net, kind of cruising in on it, and you could see because he only had 1 goal in the season. 2 points all year, and you could tell, you could see the wheels turning. He said, "Okay, don't miss, don't miss.
Don't screw this up.
Stay closer to the net." And he didn't, he didn't want to shoot while he's skating. So he tried to skate it in, and in the meantime, he gets caught from behind. Puck is taken away from him, and then lo and behold, they score. And then the Flyers lose in overtime. Just gut wrenching. He had the game iced on his stick and didn't score. So okay, that's just an absolute killing loss. Then of all things, you go into Colorado and you have
And
your highest scoring game of the season.
you
You
put
win.
seven up on him.
You put 7 on them. So 7-3. Okay, we've righted the ship. Hancock were just their second regulation home loss of the season, all season, right? All is well. And then they get shut out by the Islanders, which as with all teams, that first game back off of a road trip is a danger game. And it was a couple nights before for the Islanders. They got shut out by Buffalo a couple nights earlier. It's just one of those things that seems to happen. Okay, shake that off. They go into Columbus. They come back against Columbus. Actually, a hat trick from Konechny.
You mean Travis
And
Konecny came back for the Flyers in that one?
Konechny almost single-handedly carried the load in that game. Well, kind of as he did in Vegas too, when he scored both goals on breakaways. But they get it tied, give it right back up again. And then empty net goal, you lose. And then they got pretty well handled by Boston, who's pretty hot right now too. So that's kind of where the Flyers are. That's the nuts and bolts of it. But specifically, the number one reason, if you want to look at what the Flyers were doing well that they're not doing now, and it's killing them, has been their defensive structure, which is really solid in the first 41 games or so. It's just abandoned them. Specifically, the sheer number of backdoor goals they're giving up. And of course, what happens when you give up too many backdoor goals? Well, what happens is your goalie starts cheating to the other side. Then Skull starts coming through the 5-hole because he's not set. He's worried about moving over the other side. And then goals go in the short side too. So 5-hole short side. I mean, too many backdoor goals lead to a whole mess of problems. And it's not only backdoor goals, right? The penalty kill had a pretty big downturn. Now that seems to be being righted a little bit, but and it's not just one thing, but it's definitely been just a big structural breakdown. And the reason why the Flyers avoided, they only had the one back-to-back regulation loss all season until mid-season was because of that structure, because they were in games. They're having to chase games, finding themselves down two, three goals, trying to come back. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. So that's really kind of where the Flyers are with LA coming tomorrow, unless they solve those issues in these final three games, all of which are at home before the Olympic break. The first thing they have to do is tighten things up defensively, and then you can worry about what the other issues are. But right now, really, that's where the team has kind of lost its way.
Yeah, and just to bring this up, you mentioned the Flyers have three games left before the Olympic break. Obviously, Los Angeles tomorrow or today at the time of hearing this episode against Los Angeles Kings. Tuesday, the 3rd, you're hosting my Washington Capitals. And
First time
then,
seeing it, yeah.
yeah, first time seeing them. And then we see you, like, I think it's like the first game coming out of the
Right
break,
down out of the
too,
break,
right down here in DC. And then on the 5th, which is the last day of games for the NHL before going to the break, the Ottawa Senators, who have been a little up and down lately with their goaltending issues and stuff like that. So, and I want to bring this up. You talked about how the month of January has not been a kind month. There have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9 games where the Flyers have given up 4 or more goals. 8 of them are 5 or more. The only one that was the 4 was the Islanders shutout loss. So, which brings into the next thing of goal. You mentioned the defensive breakdowns, stuff like that. How would you rate the goaltenders of Dan Vladar and Samuel Ersin for the Flyers right now? Ersin obviously just went down due to a lower body injury, which seems to kind of be like a semi-regular thing for him now.
Yes, it is.
But at the same time, Vladar, before he got injured and now he's come back, he has been playing spectacular this season for the Flyers. How would you rate the goaltenders so far this season for the Flyers?
Yeah, I think you pretty well hit on the head there. Vladar has been really solid. Now, I say this all the time. You goaltending and team defense, five-man units and penalty kill, they're symbiotic with goaltending. One will either help lift the other one up or it'll drag it right down with it. Lucky or unlucky, not really lucky, Vladar missed 2 weeks. So they had to go with Ersin pretty exclusively. They went to Alexei Kolosov in the one game against the Islanders, I believe it was, and didn't make a save. Three shots, three goals. And the first third goals were not on him, but the second one was just an awful goal. Like over the middle, just inside the blue line, no screen. He just missed it. That can't happen. And to actually have actually make no saves. I mean, he hasn't seen a minute of action since then. Now he's back down with the Phantoms. He'll have to come back up again if Ersin is out. Ersin has been really spotty all year. The biggest thing with Ers, if you actually look through the games and the goals, to me, it hasn't been just outright soft goals, right? Like the one that Kolosov let in that I was just describing. It's not really that, but it's more of those medium chances, the kind where it's not a necessarily routine save, but it's a save you need from your starting goalie, at least some of those. And situationally. So there have been a lot of letdowns in that regard. And last night's game or Thursday's game before he got injured, it was kind of like that too in Boston, where he made three or four really good saves, but he also let two pucks go through him, 2 5-hole goals that he could have and probably should have stopped. Not outright soft goals. They came from close enough in that you got to be. On I didn't consider them soft, but I consider them stoppable. So that's really been Urs's problem. Now, I mean, had Vladar been in net during that whole stretch, now the 2 weeks he missed, I don't know how he would have done either, because again, because of all this sheer backdoor goals they've been giving up, that doesn't give your goalie much chance. One of the things the Flyers are really focused on this year, and they're not the only team. But in terms of the goalie defending half the net, right? So he worries about Worries about short side goals and then over towards the middle, being set for the shooter, not going down too soon, those kind of things. And Vladar's actually handled the puck really well too, which is not a strength of Ersin's. But that was the thing, you know, that. But the big thing is the goalie knowing where the shots are likely to come from. So, I mean, sometimes when people slice and dice it, they'll say, okay, well, this many high danger chances are expected goals, but also look at where the goals come from and how much predictability is there in how chances develop, because that gives a goalie a chance. Hey, you know, all goalies are going to face high danger shots, but it's just, you know, if there's some predictability about where they might be coming from, you're giving your goalie a fighting chance. And then, of course, if the goalie has to actually come up with the saves, and or rather, Vladar has done a really good job of that this season. So the goaltending is okay, but I mean, Vladar has his own injury history. A couple of years ago, in Calgary, he had, I think, back-to-back shutouts, one goal of the game after that. So the same kind of a run, a groove that he settled into, and then he got hurt. Hurt his hip, missed a lot of time. Last year came back very slowly, and then he was actually quite good after the Four Nations break. But do I feel comfortable having two goalies with injury histories and one with consistency issues? And you're just, you know, you're maybe a one more tweak away from having to go either with Kolosov or calling up Carson Bjarnason, who's just a rookie, 20 years old. No, I don't feel comfortable
I
with
mean,
that.
Marc-Andre Fleury just did a practice with the Minnesota Wild. I mean, maybe you
Well,
can
yeah.
always do a phone call.
Bring back Flower. Why not? Maybe you could talk him into coming to who's, you know, team's been the enemy for so long. Sure.
Yeah, but it's very interesting, and one thing and I'll echo this from what, because I actually did have a conversation with my dad, because I told him, "Hey, Dad, I'm having Bill Meltzer on. Let's, you got any questions for him?" And he just goes, he brought up the thing about, you know, the Anaheim game and how the team hasn't looked the
Yeah.
same since that. But then he also mentioned when it comes to the goalies, it's like you need two goalies.
You do.
Vladar's played
Yeah.
well, but you need somebody, because it's in his mind, and I think he echoes a fair amount of Flyer fans'
Yeah.
minds, that Ersin's not the guy, and that's somebody who the Flyers should move on from after this
Yeah.
season.
Yeah. I might even argue you need three goalies in today's NHL because guys go down during the course of the season. And
I mean,
then,
look at Lindgren last night.
yeah, exactly. You know, it's
We'll
just,
give Charlie Lindgren some flowers later, because we got to talk about that.
yeah.
But yeah, that's a good case in point right there.
No, for sure. I mean, every team is just one, you know, one groin pull or something away from trying to figure out who their goal. And then there were teams, you know, they're still trying to figure out who their goalie is, period. So, you know.
It's interesting, because I think it was a few seasons ago on the Snow the Goalie podcast, I believe Chris Therrien had said, you know, and I guess it's because of like all the expansion, you know, the talent has been thinned out greatly
Yes.
over the last several years. And when you look at the goaltenders specifically, you don't have it where it was like when maybe we had 26 teams before we had the expansion that brought in,
Yeah.
obviously, the Minnesota Wild, the jersey
Yeah.
I'm wearing right now, Columbus, the then Atlanta Thrashers, and the Nashville Predators. You know, every team essentially had a true number one and a backup. And it's not like that anymore. You have to have that 1A, 1B, because, and we've seen it where it's like,
Yeah.
Vitek Vanacek, when he was with the Capitals, had a fantastic season, got injured in the first game of the playoffs, but then, you know, wasn't the same goalie after that.
Yeah.
And it's like you, and then you have goalies who are just really bad for a couple seasons, have that one great season, and then kind of fall off again. So it's like a lot of flash in the pan, as one would say.
Yeah, well, even look at Colorado, right? Look at their two goalies' histories, you know, and Mackenzie Blackwood at one time was a really hot prospect, and then, you know, his stock fell, you know, and Wedgwood was a career backup pretty much, you know, so but he has a great team in front of him, and he's played really well too. He stopped the pucks he's had to stop. He, you know, it hasn't been a fluke, but goalies are so hard to figure out. Or look at Alex Lyon in Buffalo, just at the team executive wins record. and Buffalo can stay out of their own way as they often can't or haven't been able to. And then all of a sudden, you change your GM, and it's been like two different seasons. It's been crazy, and their goaltending has been actually part of it. And they said with Lyon, and so who knows?
Yeah,
Who knows?
it's one of the most interesting, and I say this as a former goalie myself in ice hockey, which, let's be honest, I sucked as a goalie. It wasn't my position, but yeah, it you know it, there you know we always talk about ebbs and flows throughout a game. I think the ebbs and flows for a goalie in general is just a lot more extreme than what you would see in a regular ebbs and flows throughout a season. Because there's just so much more pressure put onto that position and stuff like that.
So much of it is mental. Like when a goalie has some kind of self-doubt in his head, just it seems to be poisonous because we always start like goalies who are really good coming out and challenging, and they get burned a few times. What do they start doing? They start backing up into their net, which is a clear sign of a goalie who's lacking confidence, right? So that's and then sometimes it could just be a very small technical thing, just being a little off angle, or you're telegraphing, dropping your glove a little bit. Nothing outrageous, but just a little bit enough that shooters are picking up on it, and then you have to find it in video, have to fix it in practice. But what about when you have a condensed schedule and there's not really time to practice? So, I mean, goalies have those cycles throughout the course of a year. I don't care what goalie it is, even Vezina winners have little mini slumps during a year.
Yeah, and it's just, and like you said, with the Olympic break coming up, it's been such a condensed schedule, and there's just been a lot of injuries in general because of just how condensed the schedule is. There's no true chance for these guys to get rest, and that, really compounds all the issues, which is why I'm one of the reasons why I'm adamantly against the players going to the Olympics, because this is a problem. Legitimately, I mean, we could talk about the Capitals. I mean, we will talk about them a little bit. I'll have a more in-depth Capitals conversation next week because I'll have Ted Starkey on. But you can see it with the Caps in a way too, with how they've been struggling throughout this season, and they've been up and down all season. And I mean, we can say, and this is going to be a major talking point when I have Ted on next week. But like, yeah, okay, Pierre-Luc Dubois's been out for the majority of the season with the abdominal surgery and stuff like that. And yeah, we had Tom Wilson out for a little bit, and our defense is banged up. But I think if this was a regular season, not a condensed schedule type season because of the break, I think the Cavs would be doing a lot better because that man up, the next man up mentality would be in better effect than it is now with a condensed schedule, where it's like maybe there's some more laying back a little bit, and maybe what you're seeing is the best that you're actually going to get type of
Yeah,
deal.
and of course, of course, last year they had such a good regular season, but they peaked a little too early, and
They peak too
so much.
early, and then the OV goalie chase.
Well, exactly. I mean, it was a, I guess, a good distraction, but a distraction. But the, you have to. That's the other thing too, is that as teams move along, it's just like, okay, let's get into the playoffs, and then you have to peak in the postseason. That's part of the problem too, where you're having to play chase during the season because you can't pace yourself a little bit, honestly. And I mentioned Philadelphia's win in Colorado because that game was tied going into the third period. That was a game where the Flyers just turned the knobs up to 11, so to speak, right? In that third period, well, Colorado didn't, not that they didn't want to win, expect to win, take pride in the fact they'd only lost one regulation home game all season up to that point, but they didn't need the game, right? The Flyers had to just turn everything up to the max in one period, and they won that period and won the game. But that, I mean, there's something to be said for, when you build a lead and you're able to pace yourself a little bit, and then you want to, as you're getting ready for the postseason, start to ramp back up again. But everybody needs that the little bit of respite time, I think. And you don't really have an opportunity to right now.
And I'm looking at this right now. I have the Rangers cut out because they've put out Letter 2.0. And let's be honest, I don't see it actually happening until Chris Drury is no longer the general manager of that team. I think he's done too much damage into that locker room. But like, and then outside Carolina, who have 71 points to the top of the division, between Pittsburgh to the Flyers. So that's Pittsburgh, the Islanders, the Caps, the Devils, the Blue Jackets, and the Flyers. Between those six teams, you're not going to be able to pace yourself. You're going like you're everyone's going to be chasing each other throughout though. Like the moment we come back from the Olympic break is just going to be an all-out
Just down
race.
sprint to the finish. Yeah. I mean, you come back, next thing you know, it's the trade deadline, and then the stretch run. I mean, just bang, 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 you know.
So, real quick. Because I forgot to do it at the beginning of the episode, but that's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is also brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHTHockey.com and the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. I just got a new box in with some French toast and berries and cream. Fantastic stuff. I can't wait to break it open and have some this weekend. With that said, I want to look at some players on the Flyers and to all the Caps fans going, oh, you're DC based. Why aren't you talking about the Caps? Don't worry. This is a hockey podcast, not a Capitals podcast. I love hockey. Caps are, it's hockey fan first, Caps fan second. Always been like that. Let's look at Travis Konecny. And then there's a couple other guys I want to look at. He has in 52 games this season, 21 goals, 29 assists, 50 points, and he's a plus 8. Outside of Noah Cates, who has an impressive plus 15, and Emile Andre a plus 11. That's just what I can see on the screen right now. Konecny has been hands down probably the best overall player for the Flyers this season. I hear a lot how he's carrying the team in many games. Like, what do you think this season has really shown for Travis Konecny?
Well, it started out with a little bit of adversity for him. Did not have a very good start to the season by his standards, and which also speaks to the fact it's a long season. You know, I do think first impressions last a long time. So if somebody gets a fast off the fast start, the broadcasters will still be talking about how well he's playing, even he's been struggling for a month. So, you know, and sometimes it's the other way around too. A guy gets off to a slow start and you're still hearing he's struggling, but he's actually played well for the last few weeks. You know, so I you know, it speaks to the power of first impressions. You know, Konecny has really turned it on over the last month. He's been the exception to January. I mean, he's been producing a lot. You know, I mean, with TK, I wouldn't go by his plus minus necessarily, because TK's never he's never been a great two-way player. Now, that being said, I mean, he's a very good penalty killer because he darts in the lanes. I mean, one of his goals recently was a shorthanded breakaway, but he darted in the lane and intercepted the puck and off he goes. And actually, when Scott Laughton was here, Laughton and Konecny were a dynamic penalty killing duo because they were constant shorthanded scoring threat. You know, like over, I think, a 3+ year period, they were number one, number two in the league in shorthanded points. So Konecny brings you a lot of offense. You know, you're gonna live with some turnovers. Skilled players turn more pucks over too. So I think the two things go hand in hand. And when you look at guys that have, not that I'm comparing him, because I'm not, he's not that level. But when you look at guys led the NHL in giveaways. Well, Sidney Crosby had a year he led the league in giveaways. And Nicholas Lidstrom had a year he led the league in giveaways. And Joe Sakic led the league in giveaways. So, you know, like skilled guys handle the puck more, they'll make more plays, they'll turn some more over too. So that's part of the exchange. And you know, with the best players, you come out ahead in the exchange. You just live with some turnovers from time to time. So Konechny has been more good than bad. Over the last several years, look, they have the Bobby Clarke Trophy, which is the team MVP. He won it back to back years. Now, at one point, Vladar would have been the runaway winner. Maybe at one point Zegras was second, although he's kind of faded in recent weeks. But right now, Konechny is really starting to build a case to win his third in a row.
You had mentioned something about like first impressions and how that's like kind of what they go on based off the season, even though what they're doing now is completely different from what they did before. And one player that would probably be a great conversation piece on that topic would be Matvei Michkov, because there seems to be this notion that, yeah, okay, he came in the camp out of shape, he didn't properly train. It took him some time to get back up to speed. He does have in 52 games 13 goals, 15 assists for 28 points. He's a negative seven, so it's probably not the type of numbers you'd be expecting for him. But one of the biggest questions that is always posed about him is Rick Tocchet being too hard on him and not letting certain things go, especially the way he came in the training camp and more working with Michkov instead of dogging him a little bit. Probably not the best way to put that question, but
No, I know, and that is a constant debate, Todd. Constant. And boy, there's an element of the fan base that will track his ice time. That's what they're worried about more than anything else. How much did he play? Right? That doesn't matter. They had five or six penalties to kill that day. He doesn't kill penalties. How much was his ice time? With Michkov, and let me preface this by saying, I think he will be fine. In fact, I know he will be fine. That being said, there are still holes in his game. Coming to camp out of shape was a big thing. Out of shape meaning hockey shape. It wasn't like he came to camp 15 pounds over. He might have been a couple pounds overweight, but not his legs weren't in the shape they needed to be in. I mean, part of the reduced ice time is he would come off the ice after about 24, 25 seconds or something like that, because he was winded. So even though you look at his number of shifts, they were not artificially low. The shifts were largely shorter. Now, if I have an area that I disagree with Tock, and when I discuss Tock, I have to separate the sentimental from the objective. Because those 80s Flyers teams were the teams in my heart. I loved Rick Tocchet. Rick Tocchet is one of my all-time favorite players. He's a great guy to deal with. All those things, right? Every coach has his strengths and his weaknesses. I don't think he's been unduly harsh on Michkov. I don't. What he's asked of him is to buy in to structure when structure is needed. Tocchet has said to the team, and I had a half hour sit down with Tock early this season in his office talking over Flyer systems, and he was very generous with his time. Basically, if you want to simplify it to two things, when you're coming through the neutral zone, and there's other elements to it as well, but if you're coming through the neutral zone trying to enter the offensive zone, it's just a pretty simple decision. If they're open ice between you and the D. Okay, make a move, try to make a play. If the D's on you and the ice is behind the D, that's when he wants you to chip it in. And don't try to make a play there because it's kind of a low percentage play. That goes across the entire team. I don't think that's particularly overcoaching. I actually think that's a pretty simple
It's
decision.
called smart hockey.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's just and it's it's ultimately winning hockey too. And once you're in the offensive zone, if you turn it over, he'll live with it. Okay? But it's don't cheat out of the zone. Don't cheat out of the D zone too early. There are times where Michkov still goes to the wrong places. As I said, like plays in the neutral zone. Just those kind of things he needs to tighten up a little bit. And there'll also be times where he'll make actually pretty nice back checking plays. It's not that it's all negative all the time. Now, There's a big debate among Flyers fans. Well, they moved him to the left side, but they didn't move him to the left side immediately. I mean, Chris, you remember the whole thing in Washington with Ovi moving to the left side.
Well, no, they moved him to the right
No, to
side.
the right side. Sorry, yeah, they moved him to the right side. Yeah, moved him to his natural side. That's what I meant.
And then somehow became an all-star as both a left winger and a right winger that
Well,
season.
but yes, even though people didn't know that he'd actually switch over the right side. But no, yeah, and of course Ovi's office is that top of the circle down to the dot on the left side, and putting him on his natural side.
Do
That was a
you know
big.
re do you remember which coach did that to Ovechkin?
Was it Dale Hunter?
No. Adam Oates.
Adam Oates.
Adam Oates, in his short tenure as coach, he was like, oh, I'm gonna put you on the right side. And then I think halfway through the season, he just put him back on the left.
Hunter was the one who put him on the fourth line in power play, I think, in the playoffs. Was it?
He was
Yeah,
like
okay.
four. Yeah, because he was like, you need to, because Hunter was like, you gotta play defense. Yeah, you want to win, you gotta play defense.
I mean,
Hunter just did the team a favor by doing that, by coming in to replace Boudreaux, and that's what also led us to getting Adam Oates as coach.
yeah. Well, it's a similar thing here. I don't. My feeling is that first of all, in Russia, players are trained to be play any position. If you're a forward, you play any position. Now, eventually they find a spot for you. But that is the classic Russian method of training players, is that they're kind of interchangeable. You could play the left, you could play the right, and you could play the middle even if you have to, if you're a winger. Now Michkov has pretty much been a right winger since he's been about 16 years old. The reason for moving him to his natural wing, and by the way, folks, if you're a left-handed shooter, left wing is your natural wing. I don't care if you played right wing your whole life.
Nope. I'm a right-handed shot. My natural position is left wing. I cannot play the right side for my life.
But you're still playing your off wing though. Well, your stick is angled to the net better. It's an easier shot from that side. To me, Michkov is a guy who kind of roams around the offensive zone anyway. You line he might line up on the left, score from the right. You just have to read the play that's there. I mean, he'd come down the left if you're coming back defensively, that kind of thing too. I mean, there are two reasons for putting him on the left side. Number one is the backhand. When you have to play the puck around the boards in the backhand. Now he can do it. He's actually quite good at it. But he was also turning over all kinds of pucks. You could play video on how many times they attacked him on his backhand and he was losing the puck because his feet were kind of stationary. That was a piece of it. And the other part too is when you're breaking out of the zone, if you're a left-handed shooter, and you're on the right side, you're exposing the puck over the middle. As opposed to coming up the left wing, where you're exposing him to the boards. So that was the reasoning behind it. You can agree with it or disagree with it, but it's not some far-fetched idea as to why they would do it. Now, at some point, I think you will get a little bit more out of him offensively on the right side, just because, again, because it's an easier shot. Your stick is angled towards the net better from that side. So you are actually maybe sacrificing a few goals that way. When you're over the blue line, I want to see him be a rover. Just go where you need to go. Make your reads, do what you do. Because his off, his hockey sense, his offensive anticipation are top notch. So there are all those parts of it. The one area where I do disagree with talk has been he's been pretty much on the second power play unit. Now, it kind of varies. What's the first? What's the second? Power play has been so bad for years. Honestly, it's not a new issue. Not with this. Seems like they changed coaches a bunch. They've changed personnel, and just the power play is always at the bottom. Has been since Joey Mullen was coaching it. So, I would definitely like to see him get a minute or more out of every power play. So that's an area where I'm not totally on board with what Tuck is doing. But No, but in general, I think he'll ultimately be a better player for it. This season has been, and hopefully after the Olympic break, hopefully he closes strong, and hopefully there's still meaningful games. Now, maybe the Flyers can do something in these final three games going into the Olympic break. So they, I mean, everyone's going to hit the reset button when you come out of the Olympics, and then hopefully your guys who are in the Olympics don't get hurt, because that's another big concern
Yeah,
for.
we have our top def the Capitals have their top defensive defenseman, the future captain of the team, and our top goalie all going to the Olympics. How do you think I'm feeling about that?
Oh yeah, you're ner I mean, you're nervous every game, right? Because it's it's yeah. And then there are guys who have like a little bit of post-Olympic hangover effect too, where I mean, because these are intense games. They're as intense as any NHL playoff game. So while other guys are resting, some are on vacation, some take a little bit of time off and go back and start skating again, whatever. These guys are playing the equivalent of playoff games, then you're back to regular season hockey again. That's
Yeah,
tough.
and the one thing I will say is that at least with Michkov, he has said the right things. So I was like, you know what? I did come into camp not prepared. You know, I want to change my training regimen. I'm actually not going to, you know, really go home to Russia for as long as I did like this past off season for this upcoming off season and do more training here in Philly. You know, and you can probably see him doing a lot of that during this Olympic break too, where he just stays here and does more training to
That's
make
what he
sure
said
that
he'll do. Yeah.
like as you've said. When you come out of the break, you can hit the ground running a lot faster than the way you
Yeah.
started this season.
For sure.
So, a couple other guys I want to bring up real quick. We already talked about the goaltenders. Carl Grundstrom, who was acquired from San Jose in the Ryan Ellis trade, and Denver Barkey, who was brought up from the AHL. They've both, you know, they haven't played a lot of games, but when they've played, they've made some pretty positive impacts for the Flyers. Grundstrom has 7 goals, 2 assists, 9 points in 25 games. Barkey has 2 goals, 7 assists, also for 9 points in 19 games. And I've even heard the people saying that Denver Barkey is not going to be seeing the AHL ever again. What are your thoughts on these two players and how they've in their sh in the small size that they've played have impacted the Flyers?
Well, Bargy kind of came in and made an immediate impact. And it's not goals and assists. I think he has 2 goals right now. But just in terms of being a small guy who wins puck battles, his speed, he's gotten some power play time even. I think ultimately, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be a very good penalty killer in the NHL. Was a very good junior penalty kill, which is a whole different animal too, because you can play almost offensively when you're killing penalties in junior hockey. But he's played really, really well, and then he hit a bit of a wall to the point where he was scratched in a game, and then he came back and he's been really strong since then, which is because when a player fight, some guys. It's almost a once around the league thing you see, and not just in hockey. A guy comes up, he makes an impact, opens eyes, and then the league starts getting film on them. They adjust. You have to counter adjust. That happens every team, every season, and with every rookie. Sometimes you see a rookie come up, he'll score, say, in his first 2 games in the league, right? And then he may not score again for the next 15 or 20. Just seems to happen sometimes. So how does he handle that adversity? I know for a fact there were conversations when he hit that little bit of a wall as to, okay, do we send him down now? Do we send him back to the Phantoms in the American League? And then he decided, let's hang with it a little bit longer. I think Rick Tocchet had something to do with that conversation. I want to see a little bit more of him. If he does not go back, if he does go to the Phantoms over the break, and I'm at this point I'm not thinking he's going to. At this point I think he's gonna play the rest of the season in the NHL. They're not gonna have him here, to take off over the Olympic break and then send him down. So I think he's actually earned a spot for the rest of the year. And that's been one of the positives, is that he looks like he'll be an NHL player and a pretty good, more of a really quality role player than a lead dog. But he has the amount of energy he plays with, particularly as a smaller player, very smart, very hockey smart player. on both sides of the puck. He was a third round pick, and but he's playing a guy who could have been a late first round pick, or it's only a second round guy. So that's been a nice find. That's been a positive thing with Grundstrom, who's actually been scratched a little bit lately. He came in and just scoring goals. Grundstrom, like so many players, he's a goal scorer at other levels. I remember with the Toronto Marlies, it seemed like every time they played the Phantoms, Grundstrom would burn them. That's where I remember them. They played them in the conference finals 1 year, and Grundstrom just kept burning them. Good skater, good two-way guy, kills some penalties, can play the left side, can play the right side. I think he'll only be here for the rest of the season. I believe he's a free agent at the end of this year. It was really just, I believe. I would need to check that, but I would, but he's been a nice addition. He's brought some energy to the fourth line. He's moved up a couple of times too. You need depth. You need role playing guys, and he certainly fit that bill better than I think even the Flyers
Yeah,
expected.
he is in the last year of his contract.
Okay.
As I just do a quick Puckpedia search on the contracts right there. So, but yeah, I mean, are there any players in your mind that have really, stepped up or have taken a step back since the start of the season, since last, I mean, obviously when we spoke it was still like a week or two in the season.
Yeah.
But have there been any players that really have stepped up that we haven't talked about, or have taken a step back that we
Well,
haven't talked about?
yeah. Well, we can discuss both real fast. Owen Tippett, to me, is taking a step up. And the thing with Tippett, right? Because he fills the highlight reels. He scores some crazy goals, and he's a big guy with blazing speed. Right, and big and strong, big heavy shot. Not a very accurate shot from distance, but very good at taking the puck to the net. And he's added a physical element to his game this year, much more consistently. He was using that size a lot more than he did before, and he's even been part of the penalty kill. That's something that that's a new assignment for him, and he's really relishing that and running with it. There have been games in January where not much else was going right. The teams kind of seemed to be dead in terms of energy. And Tippett's been a guy who's actually consistently played with energy. Hopefully he can hit that next level. The thing with Tip has always been he's so streaky, Michael, where he will have stretches where he'll score 6 goals in 7 games, just had a hat trick game recently. And then he'll go 15 without one, and just red hot, ice cold, and the cold stretches have lasted too long. For a guy with his ability level, there is no reason why he has not scored 30 goals yet, except his inconsistency. Now, will he get to 30 this year? I don't know. It's reachable for him. He can do it. And if he keep, he's someone I'm really interested to see how he comes back after the Olympic break. If he can pick up where he left off, I think he'll get it. And it really sucks for the Flyers not to have Tyson Forster because they lost him on December 1st for the season, so he's been missed a ton. But Tippett has been a big step up the season. We already talked about Michkov. I thought Drysdale took a big step forward early this season. Of late, particularly since coming back from the concussion. And he's been more down than up, truthfully, like a lot of guys have. And your father made a very good point that game against Anaheim, which was and not just because it was a flyer that got run there, but okay, Johnson ran him. Well, there's a reputation there. A, B, Hathaway had just steamrolled somebody seconds earlier, so it was a revenge hit. Targeted the head, drive by, concussed the guy, and there's not even a fine, let alone
Yeah.
suspension. But what I mean, he got tossed from the game for it, as he should have, and he should have probably got 3 games on top of that. And I don't think that Drysdale's been quite right since then.
Yeah, it's just always interesting to see, we could do a whole episode just talking about player safety.
Oh, we sure could.
Oh,
Yes.
we sure, like I was reading a very interesting article from a blog out in Vancouver about how it got started, what Brendan Shanahan was doing, and how the owners kind of stepped in and was like, "Nah, we can't do it this way anymore. This is not the way." But that's we'll save that for another episode.
Yes.
But, we're
I'm in.
coming. I think we can just get everybody in on this one.
Oh, yeah. The big panel.
The
Big panel
big
on player
panel
safety.
discussion. We talk
Yeah.
about the suspensions, the fines, what's goalie interference, what is icing sometimes, but we gotta do some Caps love. I'm
Sure.
looking at you people. I know you're upset with me. We're talking Flyers. I'm in DC, blah 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 blah. I'll probably get heckled at the Caps game tomorrow against the who are we playing tomorrow? Oh, Carolina. We play Carolina. We got to give flowers to Charlie Lindgren for last night.
Yes.
He stepped up. He probably wasn't supposed to be the starter, but because Logan Thompson took the puck off the mast the previous game, he's out, day to day with an upper body, probably has a little bit of a headache. I don't,
Yes.
I wouldn't blame him. I've taken pucks to the head before like that as a goalie. It's not fun. But to get he had no chance on both goals that were scored against him. The first one, obviously, when Kane broke the US point record for an NHL player. And then obviously the one late in the third period. And then you had that super fluke goal that where it hit like the camera hole and then
Yes,
just
yeah.
ricocheted. That was
And
just,
what are we gonna do on that? That's that's
So it's
yeah.
three goals that nothing
Yeah.
really Charlie could have done about it.
Yes.
Last second makes the save or attempts to make the save because the shot went wide, injures what could have been a knee, a groin,
Yeah.
a thigh, or a thigh muscle or something. Guts it out for the shootout, gives up the first two, gets lucky on the third with Larkin hitting the crossbar, and the Caps had to go perfect 3 for 3.
Yeah.
To see Dowd score the shootout winner victory, and then all you see is just John Carlson and Justin sort of helping Charlie to off the ice into the locker room. It's just, you got to give flowers to Charlie.
Oh,
He
no, without a doubt too. And he's always been a quality goalie too. They're trying to hold, they'll sit behind Thompson, right? But I think Lindgren's a good goalie. I think Washington is one of the teams actually in pretty good shape in net because they should have confidence in either guy, truthfully.
Oh, and it's not just Thompson and Lindgren. We got Clay Stevenson and Gavin Bjorklund down in Hershey right now too. So it's like we got a healthy pipeline of goaltenders that are going to be coming up in the near future. So actually, depending on how things go, we may have to trade one of them. So
How many, not to interrupt, but I'm just like how many other teams actually have two lefty goalies?
none. It's just the
Yeah.
Caps.
Like ever.
Like, I think ever, yeah. Ever there might have been one back
Who
in the
would it be though?
day, but I don't, like, that even outdates me on trying to
Yeah,
figure that
I
one
can't
out.
think of anybody offhand.
But it's kind of crazy when you do see it with with them both catching with the left
Crazy,
hand, but it's
yeah,
like,
crazy.
or catching with the right
Because
hand,
the
my
right,
bad.
yeah, the
Yeah.
sticking one, yeah.
Yeah, 'cause I catch with my left hand. But yeah, no, it's really crazy, but it's kind of cool and it's a unique thing to have. And kind of going back to that thing where we're talking about Vladar and Ersin and a little
Yeah.
bit Kolasov, you have Vladar, but who's really your true 1B? Whereas at least with the Capitals, like, okay, yeah, Thompson has kind of really taken that one spot and
Yeah.
Charlie's the number two now.
Yeah.
When push comes to shove, we at least have a 1A, 1B that we can be confident in
Yeah.
Washington. So which is always nice. But with that, this has been the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. Bill, where can everyone find you, good sir, on the social medias and the interwebs?
Can find me at Bill Meltzer on X, formerly Twitter. You can find me about 5 days a week on PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. On the Flyers alumni social media or on FlyersAlumni.net and Hockey Hot Stove, of course.
And of course, Hockey Hot Stove, of course. And then, of course, you can find the show at TXHT underscore hockey on all social media platforms. Facebook, there is no underscore. Sorry, somebody took it from us. So we don't know how. And then, of course, everything's on the website of T at TXHTHockey.com. And YouTube is obviously where you can see this podcast or listen to it on the website as well. So with that, Bill, it has been a pleasure. I promise you it will not be 4 months until I have you on again. That is totally, and I want to address this, that's totally on me. The reason there was no episodes for 2 months was because, one, it's not a secret. I'm unemployed. I'm trying to get a new job. So I'm stressed. I'm going out of my mind. But I need somebody to bounce off of. So having somebody like Bill on, Ted, Toru, Murray, Max, it makes the show that much better. And that's what I always want to provide to everybody. So, with that, much love to my friends in Minnesota. That's why I wear the jersey on this episode today. Be cool with each other. Much love. And until next time, we will see you on the ice.